The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest and doggo in the world of PlayStation. I'm joined this week, I really hope he doesn't fall off the table, I'm joined this week by Mark Medina.
Dornbush, wake up!
Oh, I don't like this!
Jada, wake up!
Oh, I don't know the next part of the song.
I was jamming. You literally had me for a second there, Mark.
Oh, right. No. That's the next part of the song.
I've never seen Stranger Things. Hold on, before we go, Jada, I got some bad news.
Okay.
We're late on me.
I swear this isn't revenge for Severance, for the Severance slander. Although, no jury in the world would convict me for doing it.
A jury of my peers would.
I don't like loot. I can't get into it. I tried.
It's okay.
I tried my best.
You know what the thing is some people just have taste and others don't. So,
and since I like both Severance and Loot, I guess I'm the only one with taste.
The extreme. The
I never said I didn't like Severance.
That's fair.
Severance was a bit like overrated.
That's fair. That is fair.
Got it. Yeah, I'm like three episodes in and I'm just like, this isn't funny. I don't know. I just can't.
You
get
just
into
don't get.
It.
The, you're
sorry.
Just not. You just don't understand the struggle, Mark.
Yeah.
You've never struggled for anything in your life.
I've never been so rich that I don't know what to do with my money.
Says the man who has a house.
I know, the one person on the cast that has a house.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're also joined this week by Jada Griffin. Jada, hello.
Hello. We are, I feel like we should have introduced the special guest first. Like,
well, I didn't. He's making a bunch of noise. Okay, buddy. Okay, you can't do that because the microphone's going to pick it up.
It's totally fine. He's just getting his exercise in.
He is. Loki, my dog, is in the studio with us today, and he hasn't been outside of a home environment for about 2 years. He goes outdoors. I'm not saying he's never been outside.
No,
don't lock him up.
He shits in the house.
But he is not used to being in a place, and he thinks, buddy, you got to stop doing that. Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to take you off the table. Anyway, Loki is with us, and hopefully he does not cause havoc the entire episode. But he's here with us, not to talk about anything Norse-related, of course, today. But we do have, oh my goodness, pal, it sounds like you're tap dancing. We are going to be talking about several PlayStation things today, including a wonderful topic that our own Mark Medina actually suggested to us that I'm very excited to dive into later this episode, as well as some quick news hits. But before we get to that, I do want to let you all know, because we're getting there very soon, but Gamescom is coming up, and IGN is going to be there in a huge way. Gamescom is running from August 23rd to the 28th across all IGN platforms. You can expect live streams, live shows, coverage of major events like Jeff Keighley's opening night live, plus an IGN post show on August 23rd that I believe I'm going to be on, so you should tune in. IGN Live at Gamescom will be happening August 24th through 26th, including awesome indies on August 26th. Meanwhile, the Gamescom award show will air on August 27th and the cosplay competition on August 28th. Throughout those 5 days, we'll have inside looks, interviews, and exclusives from your favorite new and upcoming games. So be sure to tune in. We're going to have people on site in Germany itself.
We're going to have everybody there. I'm going to be there. You're going to be there. Loki's going to be there. Mark's going to be there. We're going to have Pizza Rat. We're going to have Venus de Milo, the fifth Ninja Turtle everybody forgot about. We're going to have everybody.
I never forgot about Venus. Hold on. But also, we're not going to be there, but we will be here in San Francisco.
Yes, we will be here.
Covering Gamescom and all the shenanigans there within. So look forward to all of that, as I said, across IGN platforms. Wherever you get your IGN, go there. And buddy, I'm going to take you maybe off the table in a sec. Anyway, with that all said, let's get into some quick IGN news with PlayStation. some PlayStation news with IGN. I said it correctly. News.
We're here.
We did not plan that.
We covered it.
I think it sounded planned. Anyway, the first thing I wanted to mention, and if Loki's going to keep doing that, I'm just going to take him off the table so that he doesn't keep...
Okay, Loki, we're just old hands, okay?
Clanging everywhere. I'm going to start a topic, and then I'm going to let you both vamp for me while I take Loki off the table. But the first thing I want to talk about is that Team Asobi has said they're working on their biggest game yet. Of course, Asobi are the team behind Astro's Playroom, Astrobot Rescue Mission, and everything Astro that you could expect. I love those games. I can't wait to see more. Knowing that it's going to be a bigger game has me very excited. So Jada, as a fan of PlayStation Home, my question for you is, will it be Astro's Play Home?
Let's see. So we had Astro's Play Room, right? So I think Astro's Play World is probably the go-to.
You go from room to world?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you can't give the people what they expect. You have to give them something they don't expect. And going from a room, I mean, it could be Playhouse, but I think the world, why not?
Okay.
And then you save room for the galaxy, universe, whatever, for the future, for the sequel, because we're going to get a sequel.
That's fair. Yeah. Mark, what about you? What would you hope to see?
Yeah, I mean, I love this game as well. So hopefully it would be cool to see a bigger one. It's a little, like, worrisome. I know people love these games, and I love this one. This was a free pack-in title for PS5. And so it's like, if they're making something grand and ambitious, I assume it'll be, you know, worth people actually having to pay for it. This, I think, was worth people having to pay for, and they got it for free. So I hope people are able to kind of, like, delineate the difference, that it's like, yeah, they made that game as a pack-in, but now they're actually making a game, and you have to pay for it. But I think it'll be worth it. I'm very excited for whatever they make, because this game is... probably, like, still one of my favorite PS5 games to ever exist. And it's the first one I played.
With that said, Astrobot Rescue Mission was paid for, so hopefully, you know, I think at least the VR audience would be very understanding of it. I get where you're coming from, though, of the hope that, like, people understand how much work goes into a game like this, even if it looks like the cutesier vein of what PlayStation gives us. You know, I think with those games, with Astrobot Rescue Mission, I could be wrong, but it might have been budget-priced at $40. I'm forgetting. But we know that they're going for $70 PS5 games this gen, so we'll see. But if it's bigger and better, like, knowing how creative they are, how great at making platforming games, I just want to see what they're working on. I hope we get it sooner than later. It's now been 2 years since we got this, Astro's Playroom, so I'm hoping we get this maybe next year. But who knows? Moving on from there, on the news beats of the day and week, Spider-Man on PC was Sony's second biggest PC launch. Sorry, Peter Parker. Got him. God of War still remains the number one. This is by player count on Steam, so peak concurrence of the first day. Spider-Man was at 66,436 compared to God of War's 73,529. Doesn't mean it wasn't a success. Obviously, the critical acclaim for the port has been really well received. I think people are clearly loving it. There's already ridiculous mods. It's going to be a big success. Mark, you've been playing it a little bit, correct?
I did. So I originally, my work on it was Steam Deck related, and it runs so good on the Steam Deck, especially if you play in the default mode where you can allow the game to go up to 60. It does that thing where it's like, in some cutscenes and depending on how high up in the world you are, it will run at 60 FPS, but then the lower you go, or the hectic combat, you do see it dip down to like 40s, maybe even high 30s. So then what most people are recommending is do the Steam Deck, like, cap at 40 FPS, which the original game was capped at 30, right? So capping this one at 30 and 40 is, like, totally acceptable. This game is a handheld game now. Like, I can't really, like, believe it. It's astonishing to see this game just run in the palm of your hands, the power of the Spider-Man. but I've also played it on PC. I'm the one who's been doing some of the mod videos. Right now it's like, it's less mods and more just like reskins. It's like
goofy.
Look, now you're playing as Kingpin, which is the funniest thing you'll ever see. But it's less like changing the game and more just, you know, make it, now you're Stan Lee, and like, do they work? Kind of, not really. Like, you go into a cutscene and all of a sudden your mouth is outside of your body, or I was playing as Mary Jane, all of a sudden her head was detached. So it's like, those things are cool. But aside from that, the actual just PC version runs great. It had a few problems when we first got it, but then they did a big patch and they were like, please play the new version. Don't go do the old version. And it runs awesome. I have a 2080 Ti, which is still a powerful graphics card by most metrics. But I'm able to run with like full ray tracing as long as the DLSS computer term thing is on.
DSLR?
I think it's DLSS.
That's a shipping company, right?
Yes. I play games on PlayStation. So, yeah, anyways.
It's a camera model.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it's okay. But no, it runs great and it looks good. And I'm glad that PC people are able to play this game now.
Yeah, well, no, as long as your DSLR is working on the 2080 PI, Private Investigator RTX card that you have there, I'm really excited. I built my first PC this weekend. I'm acting like I don't know how PCs work. I did, with the help of a friend and a listener of Beyond. Shout out to Dorby. It helped me through the building process. I was very scared.
What graphics card did you put in it?
We still have to put, that's the one thing I don't have because they were on back order. Yikes. I think we're getting
What are you looking at?
It's one of the newer, I want to say 3070.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, so, that's really good.
Great card.
I think, I could be wrong. He'll correct me in the comments
of
the show.
Now's the time because those cards have really come down closer to MSRP. So
yeah.
Yeah, now I've been considering, upping my 2070, I think I have in mind. So, but yeah. I mean, it runs everything I play so well. Like, I'm like, do I need to shell out $900 for...
It's a lot. I get why so many people, especially who listen to the show, would stick to just consoles.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, I have a 2080 Ti. It's perfect. It runs great. I would love like a 3090, but is it
worth $1,800? Yeah. It's good to hear that it's working out. Also, for those who play PlayStation games on PC, apparently Sony may be working on a PlayStation PC game launcher. There's been nothing officially said by PlayStation, but there was sort of, I believe, code that intimated this that people had found. So, you know, we'll see if that happens. I think, obviously, if they could find a way to include trophy support and tie it to your existing PlayStation user ID and all that stuff, that would be great for PlayStation users who go cross to PC as well. Whether it happens, who knows?
An awesome thing to note about that is I think most people's gut reaction is another launcher, but the best news to come from that is basically if Spider-Man were to come out on PC, you would already have it because you own the PlayStation version. That's what people are hoping from this is that you will buy it and you will own it across, just like on Xbox, you would own both versions. That's kind of the hope here because right now, Spider-Man on PC is completely separate from the PlayStation version. Nothing is the same. So
we'll see.
I kind of hope it exists.
It may. We know PlayStation is working on sort of a PC label, establishing that. They obviously are expecting, I think, $300 million in revenue from PlayStation PC releases and things in the next year. So got to be something bigger that they have planned there. Last but not least, just on the bigger news front, so people are aware, coming up in September, Disney is holding and hosting together, and it didn't work out well. Jada, it's like last week.
Add it to the dictionary.
Yeah, Mark, you missed so many portmanteaus last week.
Yep. Oh,
shout out to all the newcomers out there.
Yep, all our newcomers that are watching the show today for the first time.
why were we talking about cucumbers? Who knows? Anyway, Disney and Marvel Game Showcase will debut next month, featuring brand new video game announcements from the likes of Star Wars, Pixar, Marvel, and more. The digital showcase will debut during the D23 Expo on September 9th, so in the weekend that we're probably also getting MCU and Star Wars updates and all that sort of stuff. We will hopefully get a bunch of more updates and reveals. According to our news story, they've already promised further updates on Marvel's Midnight Suns, Amy Hennig's Marvel game from Skydance New Media, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, so probably DLC there, and Disney Dreamlight Valley, the Animal Crossing-like that Mark has previewed. Anyway, we don't know exactly what will be shown beyond that, what new games might be there. Obviously, as it pertains to PlayStation, my question for both of you, and Jade, I'll start with you. Do you think there are any odds that Spider-Man 2 or Wolverine shows up here?
Ooh, I could see Wolverine showing up.
Really?
I think even though it's further, I think we could get like a smaller teaser, kind of like how we got with Spider-Man 2. Just because, you know, Disney's putting this big push for X-Men and stuff this year with the 97 animated coming back later this year.
Yeah.
So I think it just makes sense for Wolverine to kind of get that a little bit of the limelight there. I really want to see those, the next Marvel versus Capcom, but I know that's a very, very long shot. It's a very long shot. I think Wolverine is the one we're going to see. I think that's what I'd have to put my money on. If we're going to get one of the two,
gotcha.
It'd be Wolverine.
Good to know. Well, we're going to find out what Mark thinks right after this break. We'll be right back with more Podcast Beyond.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Beyond and welcome back. We're talking about the Marvel Games Showcase that's coming up. I really spooked Mark with that one.
Oh, it was great. His face was
it's fun.
Hilarious.
You're allowed to take a drink of water. I can't because Loki drank out of this before the show.
That means so you have to drink out of it now.
Now it just sits here.
Now you have to drink out of it.
Now
you
it's
love
just
your dog.
Decoration.
Now it's just set dressing. Mark, what do you think the odds are at this Marvel Games Showcase coming up at D23 in September that we may see Spider-Man 2 or Wolverine?
I honestly hadn't considered that. And I think the odds are low only because it's like, yeah, those are Disney properties, but I don't know that I don't think Disney D23 is where PlayStation is interested in showing their games. And while these are Disney properties, I see them more as PlayStation properties first because they own Insomniac. So I feel like PlayStation has to have a little bit of say in like where these are shown. I don't think Disney gets to just be like, hey, by the way, you guys have to show Spider-Man at D23. Like, I don't know if they actually have the power to do that. Maybe they do. But I would say probably not. I don't think there will be. I would be very surprised. I don't think that PlayStation cares to show off their game at D23.
That's fair.
I think if they're going to show off Spider-Man or Wolverine, which are both highly anticipated, I think they're going to do it more on their terms instead of at what would be seen by the public as somebody else's show.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I would love what Jada is saying to happen. Like, I would love a teaser for that, especially just even if it's another for Wolverine. Like, I'd take a CGI trailer of revealing a villain in the game or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be
gameplay.
So
there's
cool.
No way.
But I'm sort of where Mark is at in that I think PlayStation would rather those two live at a PlayStation state of play or a showcase of some kind. My thought also is I'm really excited for this. Like, I'm such a Marvel fan at this point that like any game they show off, I will be interested in. But man, if they show Spider-Man or Wolverine, that is probably all anyone is going to talk about, no matter what the other games are there. Mm-hmm. Like, it would probably almost overshadow everything else as cool as that stuff might be. So I wonder if it maybe is also on like a smart move on Marvel to have it be all these newer games that we're not seeing and all that sort of stuff. So we'll see.
Also, I could be wrong. Okay, so I said that they were Disney properties, but Spider-Man's not. They only, like, no, Sony owns the film rights.
Sony owns the film rights. Disney owns the Disney Marvel, you know, Disney via Marvel owns the rights to, I think, everything else pretty much. It just happens to be aligned with Sony having the video game rights right now to that Spider-Man. Because obviously we've seen Spider-Man on other platforms with Ultimate Alliance, Midnight Suns. So that's been a common misconception that came up a lot in the past few years of people being like, well, Sony owns all the rights to Spider-Man. And they have the movie rights.
Right. But they only have the film rights.
Yeah. And they have the rights to Insomniac Spider-Man right now, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like Spider-Man is so precious to PlayStation that I feel like they're going to play it close, you know? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We'll see. Well, I mean, in the same way that I think Sony Pictures will do whatever they can to hang on to the Spider-Man license. Like, I know everyone's like, just give it back to Marvel and let him be in the MCU fully. Sony doesn't want that. They make so much money.
Oh, yeah. No. That's their moneymaker.
That's the reality of it. Yeah.
It's also such a weird thing. For one, the Spider-Verse movies are great, and those are made by Sony. And
I thought you meant like they're Sony's Spider-Verse, like Morbius.
No. Never even seen Morbius. The Spider-Verse, you know, into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for the most part, I know there was a little bit of a scare between the second and third Spider-Man movies, but Tom Holland, his Spider-Man is kind of like the core of the MCU right now. He's like by far the most famous MCU character right now. So I don't know. I think they've done a pretty good job at like, I don't know how much more Disney could want. They have
full rights. They want full rights. Anyway, just to wrap up news before we dive into things, just in case you know, as you're a follower of any ongoing games, I forgot to actually put on this list as well, but I do play it occasionally. Genshin Impact's 3.0 update is coming out, I believe, at the end of this month. So if you're into Genshin, big new update as well there. Fortnite currently has Dragon Ball stuff going on. None of us have got to Kamehameha yet and then do a BTS dance while killing Chun-Li on the battlefield next to the Daily Bugle. But, you know, that's just Fortnite for you.
Those were definitely
really
some words.
That is what you can do.
That is definitely some words.
Yeah, take that, Doctor Strange. And then also Multiverses' proper season one has launched. Black Adam and the Gremlin Stripe are new characters who will be introduced this season in addition to Rick and Morty. I've never seen the Gremlins movies, so I have no idea who Stripe is.
Boy, do I have a video for you.
Is it the Key and Peele video?
No, it's a different video that is made by some VFX artists.
Fair
and
enough.
It is amazing.
Good to know. I'll have to watch that later. But I will say, having not seen Gremlins, the Key and Peele sketch about the writing of Gremlins 2 is fantastic.
I'm wondering if I should ruin it, because I think like it's the video is totally like not Gremlins. It's Gremlins, but mixed with
Don't tell me. Yeah, don't tell me then.
So,
I want to see.
It's great.
Well, that's all the Gremlins talk for today. That's your Gremlins Minute on Podcast Beyond, our new weekly segment that Mark is going to love.
Next week.
Man, why did the listenership dive 19 minutes in very specifically for 1 minute? Everyone skipped that 1 minute for some reason.
Yep.
That's what the power of Gremlins talk.
You know,
they're beloved.
That's why,
know.
You know, it's called Going Goblin, not Going Gremlin.
Like sure.
Goblin yeah. works. Gremlin
it's
doesn't.
Goblin time, it's as goblin the Green time. Goblin will say
exactly.
in his solo movie.
100%.
Anyway, moving on from there to our main topic for this week, a very exciting one that I am also grateful to everyone out there who helped write in for this. This is an idea that our, as I said, wonderful Mark Medina had come up with. So Mark, I'm going to do a little bit of an intro, but you let me know what you think if I butcher the idea. But basically, we want to kind of talk about what got us into having PlayStation as our platform of choice. Obviously, all of us primarily use our PlayStation. It doesn't mean we don't play other consoles or things, but PlayStation is our sort of go-to platform. And, you know, for me, has been for a while. I think for some of us has been as well, later or earlier for some people. But we kind of want to, like, trace that PlayStation lineage and talk about what games or console or era got us into using PlayStation as our primary platform. Of course, like with that all said, it's not sort of the idea of like what made PlayStation the best console. Like we're not talking about that. We're talking about what made us decide like, yeah, I want to play my games primarily on PlayStation for the most part. Because I think it's fair to say, I think we all use all consoles here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was on my Switch last night.
Yeah. How dare you?
I mean, hey, that's where I'm playing Digimon Survive.
Shuhei, we've got another. We can report her. No, obviously, yeah, we all use our I think every console, I'm switching between things constantly, obviously, you know, whether for work or for fun. There's so much great stuff across all platforms, but PlayStation has, for us and for a lot of you out there, become the platform you primarily use. So we want to jump in and talk about what made that happen for us, as well as read some comments from you out there in the audience. Some people responded to me on Twitter, and I'll say it at the top here and at the end of this segment as well. But if you would like to write in with your PlayStation origin story, write into beyond@ign.com with a short synopsis, you know, nothing too essay length, but a few paragraphs at most, maybe, of what really got you into using your PlayStation hardware as like your primary platform. Did I do a good job, Mark? Did I miss anything?
No, I think you nailed it. It's you walk into a store and you can buy Elden Ring on Xbox or PlayStation. Why do you buy it on the platform? It's exactly like you said. It's not like, why is PlayStation the best? It's why this could be said by anybody. You know, yeah. By any platform person, why do you prefer PC? Why do you prefer Xbox? This is just a PlayStation show, so we're going to say why we prefer the platform we play on, which just happens to be PlayStation.
Yeah, and if you'd like another spin on this topic, you can check out my side podcast, The Ouya Show, where we'll talk about why we choose to play on the Ouya.
I still play all my stuff on a modded Game Gear. It uses so many batteries.
Perfect.
The frame rate's terrible. But
they don't even make the type of battery it uses anymore.
They don't anymore. Yeah. It's really a shame. And I have to be plugged into my car because that's how it works.
She only has the car jack.
But it's like the old cigarette lighter jack.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
It's the only thing
that's
you can use. Well, we're going to talk about our origin stories right after this break. Beyond and welcome back. We're talking about our PlayStation origin stories, what got us into PlayStation being our platform of choice. Mark, because this was your recommended topic, I do want to start with you and hear your story of your PlayStation journey. Tell me.
Sure. Okay. I think like a lot of people, I think it has to do with age, right? So I'm 34. And so there were pivotal moments every time a console came out, you know, where you kind of are in life. And I think that's sometimes what dictates what you play, right? So my first console was a Nintendo 64, 1996. So that's, you know, that's what I played games on, because at that age, 8 years old, I didn't care what I played games on. I just wanted to play games, right? And then as I got older, I got more into JRPGs. So Final Fantasy VII, Brave Fencer Musashi, something I've talked about a bunch. Final Fantasy 8, 9, Legend of Dragoon, all that kind of stuff. So obviously those all exist on the PlayStation. So, but back then, I've thought about this. Back then, I was not a PlayStation gamer. I just, those games were on PlayStation, so that's where I played them. I did not care that I was playing them on PlayStation. Because I feel like at that age, I feel like most people don't, right? You just want to play video games. None of that really matters. And I think also just like during that era, it was less of, consoles weren't a home like they are now, right? And something we'll kind of get into later with the later consoles. So at the time, I played PS1 because that's where my favorite games were. So naturally, I got a PS2 was the first console that was bought specifically for me, right? Like the Nintendo 64 was like a family console. So my PS2 was specifically for me, and that's where I played Final Fantasy X and Dynasty Warriors and all those fun things. But eventually we got into the point where it was now up to Mark to buy his own consoles, right? The 360 PS3 era came out in 2005, 2006, which is about when I was graduating high school. So you're no longer at that age where you're like, Mom, buy me a, you know, very expensive console. She's like, buy it
or
yourself.
Santa.
Or so, right.
That's who bought some consoles.
Or Stripe, the Gremlin.
Or Stripe, the Gremlin, yes. Yeah.
Luckily, I had a job. I worked at a McDonald's. It was my first job. And so, initially, I...
Did say it was a Mark Donald's.
What?
You could say it was a Mark Donald's.
It was a Mark Donald's.
It made me
Every
think
time
of McDonald's,
I go to that McDonald's, but... I look around like, you guys keeping it in shape? They're like, who are you? And I'm like, I used to work here for like 6 months.
Back
like,
in the old days.
I did 6 months at McDonald's too. That was
15 years ago. Just making sure this place is really falling apart since March.
Do you ever get Big Mac sauce on the ceiling?
What?
I got Big Mac sauce on the ceiling.
So I only worked. I only worked breakfast when
that's,
I worked.
That's a topic for another day. You only worked breakfast?
Yeah, I only worked breakfast when I was there. I don't know why. I worked at 5 a.m. every single day. Farmer.
Thank you, Red.
For anyone who isn't watching the video version, our wonderful producer, Red and Jobert, are also behind the scenes. I can't say who picked what, but this is a wonderful McDonald's ad we're watching.
We
right
got
now.
McDonald's B-roll. Yeah, I only worked breakfast. And literally, dude, people take McDonald's breakfast so seriously. Mm-hmm. 5:30 in the morning is when we would open. They'd be there at 5 a.m. And my first day, there was like an old man just beating his head up against the window with a 20 pressed up against the glass.
Wow.
And he was just like, and I'm like, dude, it's really not that serious.
And that anyways. 20 went toward the purchase of your first PlayStation console.
Good segue. Thank you for getting us back on topic.
Of course, happy to. But
so
go ahead,
it didn't.
Mark.
It actually went towards my first Wii console. Because at that, it's time for Mark to buy his own console. And for some reason, I thought the Wii was cool.
We all did. So I get it.
It had Zelda.
Anyways, that was before the days when you realized that like Nintendo games like were a little different. You know, you're not getting the same version of Call of Duty if it's on there at all.
Which, sure, third party.
In the early Wii cycle, there was all the same kind of games, but they were
Mass
just
Effect
different
was there.
Versions.
Yeah.
So the Wii U, that eventually led to okay, am I going to get the PS3 or the 360? And as we all remember back then, PS3 was insanely expensive.
That was probably back when it was like $600 for the higher tier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, and for me at the time, it didn't have any games I was interested in. I was more into Halo at that time and like Gears of War and like multiplayer games, Call of Duty. And so I was more inclined to get a 360. Again, there's no preference back then. You just got whatever you wanted. And then it wasn't until Beyond Two Souls came out. I was like, I really want to play this game. Mm-hmm. I was on a Juno high, and I was like, I need to play this game.
Yeah.
Juno had taken the world by storm.
Sure. I get it.
Beyond Two Souls is still my favorite Quantum Dream game. I love that game. So I borrowed a PS3 from a friend, and then and it was one of those things where it was like, here's a PS3. You can play Beyond Two Souls. Give it back to me when you're done. I don't care, whatever. And so then I started kind of messing around, and then eventually Last of Us came out, and then it became the thing where I was like, oh, this might be the kind of game I really like. Like, these really, like, more powerful, like, narrative-driven games.
Mm-hmm.
So then finally, when the PS4 and Xbox One came out, I like, a lot of people kind of asked around, I'm like, yo, friends, what are we getting? And the PS4 at the time, like, I can't emphasize much as...
Enough.
The PS3 controller is awful. Is a really bad controller.
It's so lightweight.
Yeah, and the triggers are just so terrible. So
but
bad.
How else would you control your dragons with your tilt function, guys?
That's why they got rid of the six axis.
Yeah. They knew it was bad because games like Call of Duty, they flipped the triggers. L1 and R1 were your aim and shoot because they knew that those triggers sucked. Anyways, so then it was kind of like, okay, where are we going to go? And everybody was like, the PS4 just seems so much more solid. It was $100 cheaper. So I was working at like a Fry's Electronics warehouse at the time. This is honestly not that long before I started IGN. And they were like, they have a PS4 at GameStop, so we can go see what the controller feels like. Because I was like, if that controller sucks, I'm not getting it. If it's anything like the PS3 controller, it's not going to happen. And as we all know, I have one right here. DualShock 4 is an amazing controller.
It's
very
so good.
Good controller.
Yeah.
So instantly I put my hands on it and I was like, this is it, right? So I think my story is not that different from a lot of people. I think the PS4 was just way more appealing than the Xbox One at the time. It was, like I said, it was $100 more because it came bundled with Kinect. It had a lot of that like share controversy, which at the time I was kind of like, I don't care. And they obviously, none of that really even stuck anyways. But we all remember the very infamous like Xbox One reveal. It was just like Call of Duty, sports, TV, blah, blah, blah. This is your entertainment system. So then when I got my PS4, that's when I went back and I played all the Uncharted's. Because when the Nathan Drake collection came out, I played the new Infamous. I never played the old ones because they never came to PS4. So that's when I became like a PlayStation, you know, I learned what platinum trophies are. And eventually that becomes your home, right? PS4 is really, the PS4 Xbox One era is really when, you know, people really started to make their home with consoles, right? That's where I bought all my games, and that's just where that library started to build, right? So then that continues on, right? Now PS5 and Series X is out, and I own over 400 PlayStation games. So clearly that's kind of where I'm going to stick. And then, so yeah, that's my origin story. As far as, like, platform preference, I honestly wish I didn't have one. I think about it all the time. I wish I could just, like, not care and sure. just get a game and be like, this is an Xbox game, or this is a PC game. You're playing the game. What does it matter what you're playing on? But I feel just so much more at home on my PS5.
Sure.
That's where I'm more comfortable. To the point where I was playing Outriders on Game Pass because it was free. And I was like, nah. And I went and bought it for PlayStation. So I could play on PlayStation. Because I was just like, this is just, if I'm going to play this game for a long, long time, this is where I want to play it.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I get what you mean. I do got to say, when you were saying you own 400, I was waiting for you to say I own 400 PlayStation 5s now. For some reason, that was what I thought you were going to say. And you'll sell them out to the community.
The one thing I'm going to pick out of Mark's story is saying that his origin story is probably like everybody else's. And like, I don't think everybody else worked at McDonald's and then also at a Fry's Electronics, because Fry's are very, like, very selected stores to have, or locations have Fry's.
Warehouse, not an actual Fry's Electronics.
Okay. Well, that's where everyone worked.
Yeah.
We all had a college job at Fry's Warehouse.
Because there was one way. Everybody lives in the one town where that warehouse happened to be.
That's how the world works.
The job I. God damn it, Red.
And we've got Fry's B-roll on the video as well. Fantastic.
The company shut down, Red. This is all outdated B-roll. Also, that computer looks like from when I was in school.
But you can get Enter the Matrix on sale.
I'm trying to remember what the company was that used to be before it was Fry's. It was like something. There was some company. I can't remember what it was called. It was something Universe.
But honestly, probably 8 years ago, I probably would have known the answer. That's the job I left to work at IGN.
Wow. Well, while you think of that and whatever that name is, we're going to take a quick break and come back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking about our PlayStation origin stories and, of course, the shared experience of all of us working at Fry's Warehouse. But no, Mark, to your point, you're saying a lot of people, I do think to a certain extent, there are definitely, and I know that there's a lot who listen, of long-term PlayStation fans, but I do know a lot of people, even from the tweets we got, of a lot of people, the PS4 was the moment where, like you said, PlayStation became where they played. And I think it was the ubiquity of it. I think it's something where, like, even if you didn't know about the sort of infamous E3 and the launch reveal of the Xbox and those stumbles, and then PlayStation kind of like coming in with a pretty biting, you know, showcase after that. I think even if you didn't know about it, the PS4 was just so everywhere, so instantly. And the games that were on it were built to be such cinematic blockbusters that I think it brought in such a wide appeal for people. And then where your friends are playing also has a big impact. So yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there who have a similar sort of, like, maybe they played PlayStation before, but PS4 was kind of what solidified it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that in mind, Jada, what about you? What sort of was your road to PlayStation?
Yeah. So I actually, the PS2 was the first console that I actually bought for myself. Mm-hmm. I was like a freshman in high school. I worked all summer, saved up my money. My grandpa took me on to the military base where I could buy my PlayStation without tax because I was short, and he's like, there we go. And so that helped me get my first PlayStation. I had a PS1 before that, but my dad had got it, and it was the only game I got was like this blank CD, and it had like 30 games on there, and like none of them were PlayStation 2 games. They were like Sega Genesis games that were on there. It was so weird.
Yeah.
But the PS2 is where I really fell in love with the system. I picked it up, and I got the Bouncer, which I've talked about numerous times on the show.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Square Soft games before it was Square Enix.
Yeah.
And I picked that up. Jak and Daxter and Dark Cloud were the first three games I played on my PS2. And those games just really it took me to a whole new world. Like, I've played so many games on the 64, the Genesis, everything else before that, the NES, and like putting in and being able to putting in a disc and being able to play Jak and Daxter and just explore that whole world and everything. It was mind blowing for me at that age. I think that was kind of what got me into it. I think what, really started to solidify me was, like, I came into my love of RPGs at that time. Final Fantasy X was a huge influence for me in my role-playing games. I fell in love with that game. I got it for, I think, for my birthday, because it came out right around my birthday that year, and I was like, I'll try this Final Fantasy game. Why not? Let's see what it's about.
Yeah.
And absolutely fell in love with Final Fantasy X. So much so that one of my friends I met senior year of high school lent me his copy of Final Fantasy VII for the PS1, because I'd never played that. He's like, oh, you've got to play this one. Played all the way through the first disc, went to swap to the second disc, and it like skipped at a point. So I like took it out, cleaned the disc, while I was cleaning it in my hand, it snapped. And I was like, oh, no. Well, this is cool, because I have no idea where to find this darn game.
Gripped it.
I had it in my palm of my hand, and it just hit a crease or a crack in my hand. I don't know what happened, but I was young, I was dumb, I didn't know what I was doing cleaning my games. And
you shouldn't have been using olive oil to clean it also.
I read online, it was a very limited internet access back then, Dornbush. I read olive oil and Lego bricks was the way to fix your discs. Yeah. So that's what I used.
Hindsight is 2020.
It is.
Yeah.
We can talk about her past mistakes, or we can talk about how she grew from them.
Exactly.
But I got lucky and I found a spare copy at like some like FYI or FYE. Store in a mall, and they had it, and the case was cracked, but like I ended up getting it for like $6 because the case was cracked. They're like, we're getting rid of these PS1 games, and the game's case is cracked, so a big discount. I was like, sold.
All right.
Yep. So I managed to finish the game and then replace it, you know, the copy for my friend.
Nice.
After leaving McDonald's, like Mark, I actually went to GameStop and worked at GameStop for many years, and I saw the rest of the launches up through the PS4. Well, PS3 and PS4, I guess. I wasn't there for PS5. I left right before that. Thank goodness, because launches for consoles, if you guys haven't worked at a GameStop, they suck. They're so... It's just
are
ridiculous.
Are people really antsy about getting their consoles?
People
that seems
are
surprising.
Extremely antsy. And the midnight launches?
Yeah.
No fun.
Yo, working at GameStop, though, when I was young, man, that was the dream.
Oh, yeah.
I would have killed to work at a GameStop. I worked at Hollywood Video, which was connected to a Game Crazy. And I would just like hang out there all the time. I don't know how many people remember Game Crazy, but
I bought my first DS there.
Oh wow, we are name checking so many like early 2000s stores.
Yeah, we're old.
It's incredible.
This is just a podcast of like, here's a story about how old we are.
Yeah, well, I'll get to a Blockbuster story next, I guess.
Yes.
But yeah, so you saw those consoles.
Yeah, so I saw those consoles through launch. I bought the PS3 60 gig, that $600 massive model, and like fell in love with Infamous and Uncharted, and like as like PlayStation was really becoming a brand for mascots. Like we always had like Crash and Tomb Raider and all those other types of big pinnacle franchises for PlayStation, but the PS3 is really where they started to step up and really fully establish these characters. Like granted, we didn't get any more Jack and Daxters, we did get new Sly Coopers, we got new Ratchets, like, but it really started to make a name for itself there. And then like Mark said, the PS4 is like the whole snafu around the launch between the PS4 and the Xbox. As a manager at a GameStop, I had a really hard time recommending Xboxes to people because A, it was more expensive. Most people were very turned off by the motion controls and the Kinect.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't want something in my living room listening to me all the time, or a camera in my living room.
Yeah.
Like, fast forward to now. And
we were so silly back then.
Yeah.
We sure staved off that issue. And there's no concerns at all.
But not at all.
Like, to your point, the PS3 era, I think, is... It's looked back on as definitely the roughest start for PlayStation, but similar to the, you know, the Xbox era that we've seen under Phil Spencer, like PlayStation needed a reason to get people to come. And like you said, it was building up those franchises during PS3, the way they've built up Game Pass on Xbox this past generation. It's very like they want to bring people in, and it definitely did that for a lot of people.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's one of those things that's, you know, it just, I felt like the experience and everything I got on PlayStation just seemed to outweigh my experiences on Xbox. And I was a huge 360 player.
Yeah.
But also I went through like 9 Xbox 360s because of the whole Red Ring of death. Yes.
Yeah.
So like at that point I was like, I'm kind of over trusting Xbox's stuff right now. Like, because granted I didn't pay anything for any of my replacements, but I was still going 2 weeks
at a time
without my Xbox every couple months.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't want to wait to play this game anymore. I want to just be able to play through it.
Yeah.
So,
but no, I mean, so, to your point. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
I was thinking about like the Red Ring of Death, and like to me, like the Xbox really hit its stride when it came out with the Black Slim. Like to me, that's the like canon Xbox 360 in my mind. I forget about the big white, you know. And what's hilarious is the original white Xbox 360 didn't even have an HDMI port. It only had the like colors. That didn't come till a little bit later, and then eventually the Black Slim when they
They had the Black Elite for the old school model. Actually, I think it did have the HDMI if I remember right, but that was the old. It cost like an extra like $50 to $100 mm-hmm. at the 360 launch to get that one if I remember correctly. So like
I was thinking about how bad that was for them for 360 the 360 era, right? Like there's like documentaries about like what they went through about them having to eventually be like, hey, you know, we're going to have to eat the cost for this, or like we're done, right? And they pushed through and they were able to make a very successful console. There it is, there's the HDMI port.
The big revolutions of the day.
The opposite of that, PS3 had a lot of its own issues as well, right? Like this was during that contentious time that you know, Xbox 360 had paid online play where PS3 didn't, but I think most people can admit that the PS3's online like wasn't that great. Led to that huge outage that you know, prevented people from playing their online games for a long time. A really long time. Months. I can't remember exactly how long it was.
I think it went on at least a full month or almost. Right.
Such a long time and so unheard of. And then obviously the yellow light of death, which was never as like big as Red Red.
Right? Yeah.
It's but so Jada, funny like what that era went through.
Jada, to your point of, you know, the PS2 era and Square, we had several people respond to my tweet being like, yeah, as a Square fan, Christopher wrote in, and another Chris did as well. Two Chrises wrote in about Chris being Square
squared.
Fans.
Chris Squared.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Said as Square fans, PlayStation was just kind of like that natural fit. And, you know, especially during PS1 and PS2 era, you weren't getting those games elsewhere.
I mean, there was no better place to play RPGs. Yeah. And like, PS2 is also the starting point for God of War. Like, we can't forget, like, that came out like towards the very end. The first God of War came out towards the very end of the God of War PS2 lifespan. And it was just massive.
And then
like,
God of War 2, I think, came out after the PS3 was even. So it was a huge era. But yeah, I think PS4 and PS2, there's obviously a lot of like PlayStation 1 original fans, but I think PS2 and PS4 are where you see those really big batches of people come in. So it's cool that you both kind of represent that. I fall somewhere in between. So for me with PlayStation, I am a little bit similar. I had a PlayStation 1. And I will say in advance, apologies, the story gets a little sad, but it has a happy ending at the end. PlayStation 1, Crash and Spyro, kind of like you were saying, the mascot platformers, that was all I played. That was the focus. Mm-hmm. And those were, I was lucky and fortunate enough that my mom was a huge gamer, as I've said on the show before. And so she would play Crash and Spyro all the time. I would come home from school and she'd be playing them. And so we would play a lot together. But we also had a Nintendo. And so it wasn't like either was our primary console. Like I didn't care about PlayStation, kind of like Mark said when I was a kid. PS2, I got it because it had Kingdom Hearts on it, and I really wanted to play Kingdom Hearts, having never played a Final Fantasy game before, but I liked Disney. But again, I didn't care about the PS2. Like, it wasn't a thing that, like, this was my game. I actually was a big GameCube person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved from the GameCube to the 360, and the 360 was where I played a ton of games for many years, I think, like, 2006 to 2009. And then I believe it was 2009 when Uncharted 2 came out, unless I'm forgetting the years. But in 2009, my mom passed away at the beginning of the year. And, you know, she was the person I played games with all the time. I was in a weird place with games for most of that year. I didn't want to play a lot of games. It felt like I had lost, like, my co-op player, you know. And so I wasn't really playing a lot of games throughout that year. But then I heard all this hype around Uncharted 2, and I heard it was like the cinematic revolution of gaming, and that it was just this stunning experience, and you had to see it, and you had to experience it. And I was like, all right, I'll ask for a PS3 for Christmas. And my dad wanted to make sure I had a decent Christmas after, you know, the first year my mom passed away. And so he got me a PS3 and like 6 or 7 PlayStation 3 games. He was like, whatever you ask for, I'll just give it to you. And, you know, I spent, I think those like 2 weeks off from school, just nonstop playing my PlayStation 3. Like, it was all I did. And it was sort of one of those things where it was like, this is my first console without my mom, the person who got me into gaming. So I'm forming an emotional attachment as I'm playing through all these games, but also it was helping to, like, I would have loved to share those experiences as well. And so I was like, it was a very big mixture of emotions as the PlayStation 3 was coming out, or as I was playing the PlayStation 3, because this was a few years after it came out. But it so solidified it for me as like a system I cared about on another level. And I cared so deeply about what I was playing, especially as I got into it and was starting to understand trophies. And like I said, like I'd had a PSP, I'd had a PS2, I'd had a PS1, but like PlayStation didn't matter to me as a name. But the PS3, once I had it, and once I was playing Uncharted and going back to old games that were getting collections and playing new games like Infamous and all that, it was like, oh, I'm kind of discovering games for the first time by myself. Like, this is me getting to figure out who I am as someone who plays games and what interests me without someone in the house who also plays games. And so the PS3 kind of was there for me when I needed it. And then it became like the most played thing for me. And I knew at the time, you know, like multi-platform games typically ran better on Xbox 360 for a long time and all that sort of thing. But I just couldn't, I was all in. I was in on trophies. I was in on the PS3 cross media bar. I was, you know, playing through everything wherever I could on my PS3. And it just kind of formed this attachment that when the PS4 came out, aside from all of the like outside stuff of the, you know, E3 showcases, there was never a doubt in my mind that I would get anything but a PS4. And like, I genuinely believe had I not like fallen in love with the PS3 at that time and really like come to appreciate it, I don't think I'd be doing this. I don't think I'd be talking about PlayStation here with y'all. So for me, it was the PS3 era, even though that's often looked at as like that weird in between era for PlayStation where it was figuring itself out. But yeah. I loved the PS3.
Well, I am glad I did not wear eyeliner today. I had no idea that's where the story you were telling today for your origin story. But thank you for sharing that with us. And like, yeah. It's very touching.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. I 100% agree. The PS3 was an amazing generation for a lot of kind of, I think of it as Sony's kind of like teenage phase, where it was like very experimental,
figuring itself out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I love my PS3. There were so many great games, and like, I was lucky enough to get the 60-gig backwards compatibility one, so I was able to still play all my old games on my PS3, no problem. So like, it was a no-brainer for me versus going, playing a lot of stuff on 360. But I mean, I still racked up, I think, 70K gamer score on my 360 in its lifespan.
Yeah.
Like, it was ridiculous. Like, I think I'm at like 120 now or something like that. But
oh, wow.
Like, over half my points came from that 360 era alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think almost any era that you come from PlayStation, it's a lot of great origin stories. And we want to hear them from you out there. We're running a little short on time, so I'm going to read one in that we got to beyond@ign.com. But if you want to share yours, please share them at beyond@ign.com with the subject line PlayStation origin story. We'll read some on the show as we go. But this one came in from Diane. Diane said, Kingdom Hearts came onto the PS2 and my family was able to get the game for us. I also spent a lot of time playing the Tony Hawk series then and watching my brothers play it because I'm the youngest with 8 years between me and my oldest brother and 5 years between me and the middle brother. I found a love for video games very early on and I never quote fit in at school or my other social environments because video games were still a boy activity. I didn't care though, I just knew I loved it. PS3 came out and we skipped the generation and played 360 and Xbox One, but both my brothers moved out and I started going out with my now fiance in 2016, and he got a PS4 in about 2017. And I was so excited for him because he got to play Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5. Hell yeah. Long story short, he went out of town and left his PlayStation at my house so I could play it while he was gone. I played it all week long and was super excited to replay the whole series. In January of 2020, I managed to get the Target Black Friday sale and got a 1TB PS4 with God of War, Last of Us, and Horizon Zero Dawn for under $300. Next thing we knew, it's COVID and we were under lockdown, and the more PlayStation exclusives I got to play, the more and more I was excited about it. My fiance and I do game together and are super excited for Ragnarok to come out as well. Diane also says they don't get to play games with their brothers as much anymore, but do still think about the days watching them play Tony Hawk and begrudgingly letting me play because my mom forced them to. Before we wrap up, I do want to just give you both 20 seconds, go real quick, say how good Cult of the Lamb is.
Oh my goodness, my cult is the Cult of the 100 Acre Woods, and I sacrificed Eeyore because he asked me to. It's dark. Amazing. It's dark, but it's amazing.
Mark?
The music. The music is so good. It's one of the best soundtracks I've heard this year.
It's super
good, and I love the game.
You should all play Cult of the Lamb. You should also play Rollerdrome, which before we wrap up, I'm going to throw to an interview I did with one of the devs at Roll7 about how cool this new game is that's now available on PlayStation. Beyond and welcome back, everyone. Jonathan here with a very exciting interview for you. I hope it's exciting because we're talking about one of my favorite games of the year, somehow a studio that has created two of my favorite games this year. That's Roll 7. We're talking this week about Rollerdrome, which is out this week on PlayStation. If you haven't already picked it up, hopefully we'll be able to give you a little bit of a sense of what the game is, how it came together, and why it is so awesome. But joining me this week to talk all about it is Simon Bennett from Roll 7. Thank you so much for joining me, Simon.
Hey, Jonathan, how's it going?
Good to see you. Very much appreciate you taking the time. Hope to learn a little bit about the game from you and sort of Roll7's philosophy and bringing it to life. I'm going to try to give a brief description of what it is, and you tell me if I'm completely off the mark, but I've been playing a bit and really loving it. It is essentially, what if extreme sports were so extreme you had to compete for your life to a certain extent? And so it is a mixture of really cool rollerblading or roller skating. I never know which is which.
It's roller action. Skating. It's roller
it is
skating.
Roller skating. There's,
there are four quadratic wheels, should we say.
Perfect.
Quadratic, is that a word?
I think so.
There's a quad system. There's a quad system.
Excellent. It's like a car on your feet. There we go. It's four wheels.
Yep.
a combination of that and really awesome arena-based shooting sort of, not death matches, but you're going up against a host of enemies that are placed around the map for you, and you're trying to do your best at both killing them and doing it in the most stylish way possible while also achieving some other goals throughout. Is that a pretty good apt description of it?
I can quit my job. You've very
Perfect.
Clearly and succinctly described our game. It's always good when we've done that good a job and you play the game, you're like, I get it. I get what they were trying to do. That was our intention. Yeah, it's blast while skating on roller skates. So yeah, that's broadly
It's been a blast to play, and I really love the combination. You know, I'm coming off of months of playing Ollie Ollie World, which I will take any time to tell people to go play as well. And I'm sort of curious, you know, just obviously talking about sort of back-to-back amazing, incredible, like, action games the team has put together in this way. But I guess sort of, you know, initial sense, where did the idea for this strange combo or, like, what was exciting about this idea of Rollerdrome that the team wanted to take on, especially with it being a 3D game? It's very different from Ollie Ollie World. What were sort of the interests with this project?
Yeah, Rollerdrome is an odd project for Roll 7. It's the first project where the creative direction, the genesis of the ideas, actually come from outside of the studio. Through various wonderful contacts that we have in the industry, we were made to know about not only the game, but the creator of the game, Paul Rabbit, who'd been building a prototype in his own time and sort of getting some traction on social media. And really, we were introduced to the project with a view that this could be the perfect blending of everything that we'd done from the sort of skip flow state gameplay of Ollie Ollie, that sort of skater understanding, that the skateboarding understanding of the studio, to the sort of more bombastic side of things from Not a Hero, and then also the arena sort of future sport vibe of Laser League. I think Rollerdrome really always represented, I guess, like the kind of pinnacle of the things that we'd done to that point. And so we spent a lot of time talking with Paul, thinking about where we could take the project and how we could actually turn it into a reality from, you know, just essentially a gray box prototype. And we've spent the last 3 years working very closely with him, building a team around it, and bringing, you know, the sort of, I guess, things that we've learned over the past 15 years into the fore, and hopefully put together something that I think represents a really exciting, a really exciting new IP for the studio. So it's we're, yeah, like, so excited to be able to put it out. To be able to put it out so soon after Ollie Ollie World is pretty insane. It's been a busy few years. but yeah, it's an awesome game. And I think the team, should be incredibly proud of what we've got. We're over the moon with it. So,
that's amazing to hear sort of the outside nature of the original idea. But like, to your point, it, at least as a fan, it does feel so in line with what I think of when I think of Roll 7 games. It really does fit into a lot of the different ethos, whether it is Ollie Ollie or Not a Hero and Laser League and everything. It does sort of run the gamut of all that. I guess, you know, out of curiosity or sort of from that initial idea, what were things that the team, you know, what was Roll 7 hoping, like, why did it seem to make such a fit, or what were some things that the team wanted to bring to it that they saw as a spark for that initial idea?
Yeah, I think quite interestingly, like, we'd been sent the prototype. We didn't actually initially jump on and play the prototype. It was when we saw the GIFs online that I think we saw the ambition and the real focus around, like, bombastic flow state action, around making, like, moments where you feel like a badass. And I think at their core, all Roll 7 games are, like, very crunchy, feel-related flow games, right? Everything's really responsive. Everything's really, you know, the game plays well and feels well, and it's something that we've always focused on. And I think when we saw those GIFs, like, we played the game and the feel wasn't there, obviously, at that stage. It was an early prototype, but I think it was looking at those GIFs and thinking, could we create a game where, like, with not too much practice and not too much work, you could get to a position where most players could actually feel like a badass playing it, rolling around and shooting people. And I think with a view that, like, with a bit more practice taking yourself through it and really getting into it, that you could really start to master some of those unique sort of combo sets and murderous mayhem around the arena. And I think, like, that was always the challenge. It's like, how do you get people to feel as badass as the GIFs as soon as possible? Because once we can get people into that state, that's when you're hooked. That's when the game really clicks. And I think that was always our ambition with the game. It was always what we wanted to achieve with it. And I think it's the thing that we come back to whenever sort of development is sort of maybe taking a path that we're not sure about. It was always like, how do we make sure that people get to feel like that? That was the ambition. That's what the studio really wanted to focus on. And I think, yeah, hopefully we've made a great game for Rolodrome. We've made a great game with Paul, but also we've made a great Roll 7 game and something that people will look at and say, yeah, this is a Roll 7 title.
And speaking to that, I feel one of the things that I, you know, especially seeing it, but people may have, you see a great GIF, as you're saying, it looks so cool, and you're like, I hope I can pull that off. It can maybe feel a little daunting to jump in, where you're like, oh, I gotta, I have to figure out how to skate well, but I also need to be able to shoot accurately. The game feels like, as you were saying, it does a lot to make sure you're getting the hang of things slowly, whether it's the, you know, just even the basic tutorialization that happens within the context of the game, or the ramp up of difficulty as you get through new arenas and new enemy types, new weapon types. It feels well laid out. I imagine that was, like, a key part of it, was making sure things get doled out at the right time and giving people that flow.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, like, and if Paul's watching this, no offense to him at all, like, you know, when you play the first prototype, we're trying to link a lot of different gameplay elements together. And, you know, the original that we had, there was like, you had to land every trick. Like, there was a lot of extra things, extra sort of essentially sort of brain space that the player was needing to interact with to actually get to that point. And so we started being quite reductive with that and say, right, well, do we need to have all of the elements of a shooter, and do we also need to have all of the elements of a skater? Like, if you try and, like, combine both of those things together, you're going to have bandwidth chaos. It's going to be a real struggle to actually interact with those. And so we're going to need to be reductive around specific elements of both of those genres in order that they might meld in a way that is, you know, I guess, sort of that goes hand in hand as opposed to not. And I think that was always our biggest challenge, was working out how we can introduce you to the right parts of those mechanics at the right point and not overload you as a player. And I think, you know, lots of player testing lots of, you know, deep discussions around, you know, have we gone too far? Should we be pulling back a bit? Lots of balance. But, you know, I think what we have now is a really balanced way of introducing people to it. And I think what's exciting is, you know, especially throughout a lot of that player testing, was just seeing people within 10, 15 minutes having one of those moments and being like, oh, I thought it was going to be way harder to get to one of those moments. It's being able to do those moments, you know, seamlessly in a massive combo and like maintaining that sort of flow throughout that you're kind of aiming for. So I think, it's been a challenge, and it's been something that the team have really, you know, got behind and we've been sort of driving home right to the finish line.
Yeah, there's been so many times where I'll complete, especially as I've gotten to more difficult levels and I have, you know, four weapons and some are closer range, some are, you know, more area of effect or have a larger impact of things versus just like the dual pistols you start with. I will play through a level, do okay, and then immediately see the like 12 different places I could have been doing tricks while I was shooting or finding a better flow through a level. It's the two sides of it, I guess, feed really well into each other, which, to your point, I guess, is a lot of fine-tuning and testing and figuring out how much is too much on either side to make sure it all works together cohesively, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%.
And so, yeah, there's great moments for people who haven't jumped in where sort of even at its base state, you know, you're doing awesome tricks to be able to refill your ammo so that you can go back into a really cool, you know, land and you're able to take out a few enemies as you go, or maybe you're shooting enemies mid-jump. Does, you know, the flow of things, as you were saying, feels really important, but that also speaks to like level design. Did, you know, at a broad level, did the spaces that you're fighting in, did they go through a lot of different changes? Were some like basic ideas set up? Cause you have some things that are like indoor arena, like an indoor mall, a snowy outside environment. There are some themes that run throughout it, but I'm curious how those like came to be basically.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously throughout development, we played around with much, much larger level design, you know, huge open spaces with multiple different paths. And we tried creating areas with much, I don't know, more gauntlet style areas. We'd been through the gamut of different sort of levels, and fundamentally decided that more compact arenas was going to be the optimum route. And really allowing you to find kind of, I guess, almost just, you know, figures of eight essentially around the arena, where you could kind of find optimum lines to go in and kind of create havoc, whether that's through skating or, you know, linking up, sort of taking on the house players. And I think initially we were very gray box with everything and just finding that sort of perfect mix of, you know, just getting the right size for the level. You know, this isn't a game that's existed before. There's not a huge amount of anything that we can point to with regard to like how big these things should be or what sort of shape they should be. So there was a lot of iteration on there, and our level team did a remarkable job. I think when it came to dressing them, the thinking there really was viewing it through the lens of a director making a film about 2030, but in 1970. So really odd concept, but really like low budget, thinking creatively about like what character, you know, what characters could be wearing, what, you know, what sort of places we could be. So like not too fantastical or remarkable, because that's going to cost a lot of money. Like CGI might not be that good in the 70s. So it was a really interesting way of doing it, because we could have gone totally fantastical with it. But I think viewing it through that very sort of, I guess, budget-stricken director mindset of someone in the 70s actually gave us a really strong hook for which to build out not only the levels, but the narrative scenes as well, to find that space for the soundtrack to come together into it as well. And you know, some of that, just that real vibe that we went down, that's the reason that those locations are, I wouldn't say unremarkable, but they're not absolutely fantastical. And I think it's that sort of restrained vision that really helped us.
they are spaces that I think are really well built for the gameplay here, but you're right, it's not like you're going into an arena that has like billions of futuristic lights and like spectacle to it. There's a like a brutalist nature to it almost sometimes, of like 100%. That like retro futurist look to it. I think if anyone hasn't seen what the game looks like, I can't encourage you enough to go check out it, because it's beautiful to look at. But that, yeah, that balance between old and new is really immediate as you're playing through. And to your point, you know, you mentioned a little bit, and I don't want to spoil it for people, but there is a narrative that threads this all. There is a story that you experience as you go through. Was the inclusion of that something, you know, obviously something like Olly Olly World also has a narrative running through it here. It lets you figure things out. There's a little bit of mystery to it as you're going through it. And I really enjoyed the appeal of that. Mm-hmm. Was that something that was kind of there from the early days of the project, or did that come in as the team was figuring out how to bring it all together?
It was actually, interestingly, something that there was a GIF made with a sort of first person camera view wandering around a locker sequence, and then essentially sort of morphing into that third person view throughout, you know, through into a tunnel and then out into a level. So the vision was always very much set that this game, you know, had the potential to have narrative. We had a lot of deep discussion as to whether putting resources into sort of essentially like a side narrative for this game was going to be a valuable piece of effort or not. And actually, I'm so glad that we went down the route that we did. It is a it's a lovely way of just framing some of the stuff that's going on, but without being too over the top. It's not ramming it down your throat. And you don't have to engage with it if you don't want to. If you just want to skate, you can. But if you want to explore that slightly darker side of the sport, highlighting like, you know, the sort of this, like this company Matterhorn, I can talk about Matterhorn, like there's this big major sort of corporation that's running everything in the world, and they're using this sport in a particular way. Like it's a lovely, lovely framing for why you're doing what you're doing. And I think like there's just a lot of little tidbits in there for people who really want to kind of dig further into what we wanted to do with Rollerdrome. So yeah, I'm not gonna spoil or get too heavily into the plot, but I love Matterhorn. I like how dark they are. I like how representative they are of some of the things that might be going on today as well. So.
I was so shocked at that part of the game, and I can't recommend enough. Like, as you said, if people want to, they can just kind of, in those first-person sequences, get plopped in, run to the door, and then get right into the skating. If that's what they're there for, you can totally do that. But there's so many little details that you all nestle in those scenes, and they're quick scenes, but there's so much there. And as you said, it's really reflective in surprising ways, and I think does a really excellent job of tying into some very, very present-day themes, but something that is told really well through this exaggerated story in this exaggerated world and sport that we're, you know, engaging in throughout the game.
Yeah, we work with a fantastic narrative designer who's a writer, he's a sci-fi writer, Thomas McMullen, who joined us on the project and really built out this fantastic world for us to hang this sport on, working very closely with our creative director Paul. And you know, that what's come out of that, I think it is something that we're very proud of. And I think when you combine that with the music, like those sequences are really quite pretty. Happy with that. Very happy with that.
Yeah, they're a joy to experience. And as you've mentioned a few times, the soundtrack is excellent, because that's one of those things that I think, you know, obviously, just as the easy comparison for the two games that the studio has put out so recently, but Olly Olly World's soundtrack and score really presents this very flow, chill, getting you into that zone of things. And here there is I think there's a very zen sort of aspect to the music, but it also amps up and really ties into the thrill of the sport in a really great way. Were there certain, you know, themes or things that the team wanted to capture when it came to the sound side of it?
This is the one part of the studio that I still have sort of wrestled to maintain control over, which is it is the music side. It's the side that I've always been sort of heavily involved in, and this was the biggest challenge that we had putting together a soundtrack for in any game in one way, and then totally the opposite once we'd found the right person for it. But the ambition that Paul had as our creative director was essentially to create a new genre of music, which is 70s, 70s, where are we? Oh my God, my brain has just gone aspried. 70s synthwave style music. And obviously you have 80s synthwave, that's fine, but like 70s, okay. And so when we were sitting down saying, right, well, can you point to any music that actually is representative of what you want in this game? He would point to a bunch of music that was quite 80s. Maybe some of it have some 70s elements. But for about 6 months, we were on this impossible journey of essentially like meeting with and discussing with synthwave artists about trying to create this new sound. And we had two or three dead starts, and at one point we thought we are going to be get absolutely nowhere with this. And then one of the artists that we'd reached out to, Ian, who is Electric Dragon, who ultimately put the soundtrack together, sent some tests over. And Ian is, you know, of the 70s. Like, he's an older electro synthwave producer, made some amazing stuff, very like 80s focused, but this was like a challenge that he took on, not just like as a, oh, this will be fun to do this. Like, he's an avid gamer himself. He'd never put together a score for a game. And he started churning out music like no other. Like, he was sending 4 or 5 tracks on a Monday, having worked over the weekend. He was buying old retro, like 70s synths from Russia, and getting so lost in the process, and literally like the soundtrack just wrote itself once he came on board. And it is the ambition with it was it was constantly driving. We didn't want too many build up sections. We wanted it to be pretty much just intense. And like, it is such a remarkable set of original tracks, something emblematic. There's something very iconic about a lot of the themes in there, and that some of them are like, I heard this theme before. Like, they're very iconic, but like driven through this very sort of 70s sound. And yeah, like, for those people who want to get through to the end of the game and play Out for Blood, which is sort of New Game Plus, there's a whole set of remixes of the entire soundtrack that you can then play through with the Out for Blood mode. So again, like the soundtrack itself, like, it was the hardest for us to come together on as a studio of any of our games, but when it did come together, I'd say it's probably the best output that we've had musically. And yeah, massive props to Ian Electric Dragon on putting that together. He's playing live at the launch event tomorrow night. I'm very excited to that. So.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a fantastic score that I think complements the visual side, the gameplay side. Like, really, as you get into it, having that score there, I think elevates it, the action that you're doing so well. And I appreciate that the team has put out some of that music beforehand. People can go, listen to it on streaming platforms and such.
Yeah, you can listen to the whole soundtrack.
Is it all out?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
It is all out. Yeah, awesome. Go check it out.
It is, yeah. I think the first time I saw the first theme come out, I had it like looping in the background for a full day of work, because it's really great stuff that the team put together there. And I think, as we've said, this is really a game where there are those details to pull into. I think replaying levels, I've come to appreciate so much more of the way things are laid out, the intricacies of kind of what it's implying about the world and the larger state of things. But there is such a core of an amazing, really crunchy action shooting / skating suite of gameplay here that the team has really put together. So Simon, congrats to the team on this. Congrats on such a busy year for the studio. Legitimately, when I say it, I mean it. Both games are two of my favorite games this year. I don't know how y'all did it, but it is really awesome to see. So thank you so much for taking the time.
We set out Thank you so much. We set out 3 years ago to make your 2022, Jonathan. So I'm very glad that we've delivered on that. Thank you so much for supporting both games. We cannot wait to see what people think of this tomorrow. Grab it on PlayStation. Grab it on Steam. Super awesome launch price as well. Get involved. And there's a demo as well on PlayStation Plus. Plus premium trial.
Yeah, if you're curious about jumping in, I definitely recommend taking it for a spin there. But I've been having such a blast. We haven't even mentioned the sort of like DualSense integration. I think it feels so great on the controller as well. What the team has kind of put together there of the way the different guns feel, the skating, the feel of it really comes through well on the controller as well. So I've been having a blast there too.
That's really good to hear. I know the team will love that as well. Again, something that we really wanted to focus on when we're having early conversations with the team at PlayStation, the DualSense was right at the top of the list there. So it's been a lot of work for the team to really bring that to the fore, but it feels pretty crunchy. So very happy with that.
It's a great feeling game, and I can't recommend it enough to people. I know it's going to happen, but for these few brief days where I've been pretty high on the leaderboards, I can't wait to see that just plummet very, very quickly. But I look forward to score chasing with other people out there. So, Simon, thank you so much again for the time. Congrats to the team, and I'll throw it back to the rest of the episode. And that's going to pretty much do it for us on this week's episode of Podcast Beyond, because Loki apparently really needs to go bark at something. Mark and Jada, thank you so much for joining me this week, for sharing your stories with the audience. And thank you for everyone who shared their stories. We do want to read more. We're just unfortunately a little bit of a time crunch, but we'll read more next week as well. We're going to have a fun in-studio show next week for y'all. It's going to be a special one, so look forward to that. Gamescom week is obviously next week, and we're going to have a lot to talk about. So I hope you'll join us next week for a really fun, probably chaotic. This will be the first time all three of us are in the studio together. So it's going to be real fun.
I'm bringing my whoopee cushions.
Perfect. Well, look forward to that, audio listeners. And for everyone else out there, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Jada's at Jada_Rena. And Mark is at Mark_Medina. Again, you can write into beyond@IGN.com with your PlayStation origin stories or your memory cards. But thank you, as always, so much for listening and watching to our show. We're live every Wednesday at beyond.IGN.com, youtube.com/IGN Games, and your favorite podcast services around the world. Thank you so, so much for joining us. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.